Discourse on Habeas Corpus by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 1, Introduction. Habeas corpus, unlike other rights embodied in the Bill of Rights, was incorporated into the Constitution. And as we proceed along the study of habeas corpus, you'll begin to understand why. It is found in Article 1, which is the legislative branch of government, Section 9, Clause 2, quote, "The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended, unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it." That is habeas corpus. Why is it called a privilege instead of a right? Quite simply, from a legal standpoint, a privilege is a right that can be suspended. However, the cause for suspension is clearly outlined. In cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. That means that Congress only can suspend habeas corpus, which happened in 1861. And it has to be for a cause, rebellion or invasion. I have not found any suspension of habeas corpus since the Civil War, and it was only partially suspended at that time. So it is an inherent right and was worthy of consideration by the Founding Fathers to be embodied in the body of the Constitution itself, not in the Bill of Rights. It had to be there regardless of the disputes over the Bill of Rights. Now, my involvement in the study of habeas corpus began based upon basic patriotic concepts of jurisdiction. And so the first time I tested jurisdiction, not understanding habeas corpus the way I do now, but at the time, in 1992, I received a parking ticket. I had a meeting that I had to go to, and there was plenty of parking, but all the stalls were filled except down one aisle. Down that aisle, there were two or three vehicles out of probably 40 or 50 parking spaces. Every few spaces, there was a sign that says, "Parking by permit only." So I parked there. I didn't tell me where to get a permit, so I parked there. I got a ticket. The ticket was $45. I decided to fight the ticket. I went to court, and the prosecutor said, got the guy issued the ticket on the stand and said, was that in the city of Orlando, the county of Orange? And basically that my truck was there and that he cited the truck because it didn't have a permit. So got me thinking, city of Orlando, county of Orange. So I said to the same witness, I said, "You said that that was in the city of Orlando. Was it also within Orlando, the city?" And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Within the geographic boundaries of Orlando, the city." He said, "Yes." And I said, "Then you said it was in the state of, or the county of Orange. Was it also within Orange County, the geographic boundaries of the county?" He said, "Well, yes." And I said, "Was it within the geographic boundaries of the state of Florida?" And he said, "Yes." And the judge interrupted and said, "I've heard enough. I find you guilty. I fine you $15. Now, the parking ticket was $45, but he fined me $15. And I said, "I haven't completed my defense." He said, "I've heard enough." The prosecutor said, "We've got a lot invested in this case." I suppose because they had to go to court over a parking ticket and it incurred additional expense on their expensive parts. But the judge said, "I've made my decision." Now, in Florida, if you don't pay a traffic ticket, they'll suspend your license after a period of time. I never paid the $15. They never suspended my license. I'm not quite sure why. I can only surmise that the judge made some note on there, "Do not suspend license over this one," something to that effect. Or maybe the judge had to order the suspension. I'm not sure. But at any rate, this was a jurisdictional challenge. A meager one, but fruitful. The next time I experienced dealing with habeas corpus, in 1993 I'd gotten a traffic ticket, or 92 or 93. I'd gotten a ticket for driving my motorcycle without a license and without tags on the motorcycle. My first court appearance was March 20th or 19th, somewhere around there, 1993. I happened to be in Waco, Texas at the time, and so I didn't appear. I tried to get an extension. They wouldn't grant it unless I waived rights, so I just didn't appear. I ended up getting arrested for not appearing and went through a few hearings. I guess I should mention the first hearing, though. I went in, and after about 2 hours of waiting, hour and a half, 2 hours of waiting, the judge said, how do you, read the ticket and said, how do you plead? And I said, guilty. And he said, well, why are you pleading guilty? And I said, well, I've been here 2 hours now, and I can't afford to plead not guilty. So he entered a plea of not guilty. Now, this is before I went to Waco. It wasn't until, February or March of 1995 that I finally got to court, because I was traveling around the country talking about my experience in Waco. And so I went to court in February, March 93, or 95. The night before court, I was reading some notes from Richard McDonald, who is probably the premier state citizen, not sovereign citizen, but state citizen advocate in the country. In fact, I spent a couple weeks with Richard out in California in 1992. But I'd read a chat that was on his bulletin board, and I didn't quite agree with it, so I modified it a little bit for my purposes. And when I got to the courtroom that day, when I sat down, some young girl walks up and said, are you Mr. Hunt? And I said, yes, I am. She said, I'm your court-appointed attorney. I told her that I need not be represented in this, or that she was going to represent me, and I need not be represented in this court. However, you're welcome to stay and watch if you'd like. And so finally my turn came up, and they started talking about, they set jury trial date for July. They'd done a number of things. And during the course of this, I kept trying to interrupt the proceedings by saying, I object to these proceedings. I am the moving party today. I bring forth this demand for habeas corpus. Well, I never got it fully out. Now, if you understand court, if I object to the proceedings, that means this is supposed to stop and deal with the projection, the objection. You've seen it on television. I object, Your Honor. And Your Honor, the judge has to rule on the objection, the sustained or overruled, before there's proceeding. But this judge wouldn't stop. He wanted to Feretta me, since I didn't accept this young girl's assistance. So he had to ask me a series of questions. And every time he said, I have to ask you some questions, I said, you can ask the questions, and if I want to answer them, I will. Then finally, I got it out. I object to these proceedings. I am the moving party today. I set forth this demand for habeas corpus. I cannot find an injured party. I need this court to direct the sheriff of this county to bring forward the injured party with the sworn affidavit as to the injury. If this is civil rather than criminal, I need the injured party to bring the original contract I'm alleged to be party to and in violation of. And the judge said, well, I still have to ask you some questions. And I said, Mr. Marblestone, are you suspending habeas corpus? And I heard this girl, young girl, telling, she was standing next to the prosecutor. She said, I think he needs to be evaluated. But when I asked if he was suspending habeas corpus, he looked at the prosecutor and said, well, can you find a witness to put Mr. Hunt on the motorcycle that long ago? Well, it might be difficult. Wait, they said jury trial date, so he knew the officer's schedule. Then the judge said, would you consider a null pros? Prosecutor said, state will consider a null pros. Judge said, would you put it in the form of a motion? Prosecutor said, state moves to null pros this case. Judge says, granted, get out of my courtroom. And it was 18 seconds. I have an audio recording of that. It's not very clear because it was in my pocket, but I could time and hear what I said. That it was 18 seconds from when I said, have you suspended habeas corpus, to when he told me to get out of his courtroom. So that was a shocker, and it made me realize that habeas corpus was in the Constitution for a reason. It was that was in 95, and I've always figured I'd do more research, and from if I ran across anything about habeas corpus, I'd read it. But it wasn't until late 2011 when I was contacted by the sister of one of the defendants in the Florida Common Law Court trial. Now, back in 97, I testified on behalf of one of the defendants in the Florida Common Law Court trial. So I was vaguely familiar with it, and I didn't know Larry, and I didn't know his sister, but his sister said, can you help Larry? And I decided, well, I guess I'm never going to use habeas corpus for my own protection, so maybe I ought to try it and see if I can help Larry with it. So I agreed to do it, and I started doing more thorough research. Now, what we're going to do in this discourse, first I'm going to explain what habeas corpus is. Then we're going to talk about the history of habeas corpus in this country, and then we'll talk about what happened, my 2 years in an effort to get a habeas corpus writ granted for Larry Myers, the fellow I just mentioned. And I think that you'll find it rather enlightening and well beyond what they ever told you in school. In school, if you got as much education on American history as I did, you heard that habeas corpus was the sacred writ, and they implied it's kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card. Well, that's not quite the case. It is the sacred writ, and there are a number of terms, habeas corpus, that we can look at, but only one of them is the sacred writ. So we'll discuss habeas corpus and what it is in the next episode.